one of the all-time favorite shows.
Episode 68 of Because You Are Home. This week, as mentioned in last week's episode, we're doing something a little different. We're looking into horrible histories. Don't sue us. Please don't sue us. So you have, I've said before, I studied history in college and I have done a few random classes. And obviously you've got your historical bad people, your no-nos, you've got your dictators, Stalin, Hitler, Mussolini. It's way too many, really, to just list out. But what we're looking into are like the real bastards, the real people who are like so cruel and unflinching in the torture that they brought out on people that it actually inspired people to make horror movies about them. Whether it be the myth that was surrounding them that was so tantalizing that it, you know, it just had to become a horror movie. They're the type of people we decided to look into because chances are myself and Grace have already watched horror movies with the people in them already. And you might even find if there's not a horror movie based around this person or where they're in it, they're definitely mentioned in like 50 million documentaries. I think Grace, you had a bit of trouble finding a film on your particular person.
Yeah, so I was like, why don't we do with the movies as well? And then I picked somebody who doesn't have a movie and I was like, lol. But I can kind of see like his story has massively kind of inspired a lot of stuff. Like
you'd be able to go,
there's a bit of that in there, there's a bit of that in there. And, you know, pretty bad guy. If you believe it, if you don't, he's not.
That's another thing that myself and Grace have like, we were like, yeah, we totally got these topics and we're going to rock on them. And then like upon further inspection, you're like, yes. After they died, people just wrote so much shit about them to make them look even worse. And then, you know, like the myth about them gained legs and became even bigger. And so you're kind of like, there is a lot, I will say, like, if we look into this further down the line in the podcast, there is a lot of with each character of separation of fact and fiction, and that probably the truth about their character lies somewhere in the middle, because it's probably a bit of, you know, no smoke without fire, but it's hearsay. And especially because with these people, they're historical figures, they're from hundreds of years ago, that it's very hard to have factual, like there's no video recordings, there's even, like you're basing it off hearsay. And what happened for mine was all a lot of the witness statements were, even those statements against the person were gotten through torture. So it's all coercion, which these things still happen from time to time, like not the torture, but the coercion for, you know, for your witness statement. But like, it's very hard to trust people. And especially if they're running with a group and you're saying something and then you're just like, oh yeah, no, I remember. It's like Chinese whispers.
Yes.
So just going to take a little side note. I was talking to Grace about this earlier on before we dive into our two people. If anyone's not in Ireland, like obviously there's a lot of reboots of films going around. But I didn't know that two Irish people were basically trying to reboot Weekend at Bernie's. Yeah. In a post office.
The most wild story to come out of Ireland this week. Even wilder than the Russians, really.
Yeah. Russians on our doorstep as well, which, Jesus, like, just to put that aside for a second. What do they want with us?
They just want our water.
So basically, for anyone who doesn't know about this story, and I would recommend that they look it up because it's just fucking bonkers. Like, I mean, it's sad, but it's just so hilarious at the same time.
It's like, it's Weekend at Bernie's. Like, yeah. It's just crazy.
So this, and this is where I can't find out whether it was a son and a nephew were trying to do this. But basically this man had sadly passed away that morning from a heart attack. And his son or nephew went to the post office to collect his pension. And they said, no, it needs to be the actual person to draw down their own pension payment. So these two guys in their 30s brought in the deceased man. I'm only imagining through a pair of sunglasses and a cap on him. And this poor woman had to try and serve him, and they were speaking on his behalf. And then when they asked about the man's health, the two men in their 30s left the body in the post office and buggered off.
Yeah, bye-bye now.
And we're recording this on Thursday, the 27th. As of today, I saw on the news headlines that one man has been arrested in and taken to the Garda station because of it. Like, no shit. But that poor woman who served you, yeah, just doing your job in the post office.
And like the post office of all places. Yeah. I just feel like that's such an Irish place. Like,
it's innocent.
You leave our post office alone.
Do not besmirch it. With your fraud. But like one person who was a witness was like, yeah, I thought there was something wrong with him. Like, I thought he was just unconscious because his feet were dragging. And I'm just like, oh God. Oh, it is like, I want to say that this probably does happen in other countries or whatever, but it just seems so Irish that they thought that they could get away with it.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
But like, you could only do it for a week, you know, at most, like one pension collection.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's just all mad.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you fuck with the postal system or like anything to do with money from the government in Ireland, that man is going to end up doing time for trying to defraud the government, yeah. Let alone tampering with a dead body.
Yeah.
It's the money that they'll get him on.
They isn't like they might not do time for attacking somebody, but they'll do time for that. Fucks.
Yeah.
This
country.
Yay.
So speaking of from one group of bastards to another group of bastards, Grace, who was your topic for this week?
Okay, so I have looked at, okay.
Off to a great start.
Because, right, I was like, in my head, I was like, okay, so it's Giles de Rais. But obviously, he's French. So it's actually Gilles de Rais or Gilles. And then I was trying to Google him during the week and I forgot his name completely. So I put in something like Christopher de Berg. Like, so
Christberg.
So in YouTube came up driving home for Christmas. And I was like, this is the best mistake I've ever made.
Nice. And Christopher.
I don't know. I hope so.
Anyway, what a tune.
Yeah, it came up by some way of me doing it. Basically, yes, I looked at this guy, Gilles de Rais. I am terrible pronunciation, but fuck it. And he's a character. Like, there's loads of crazy things about him. Basically, right, his birth date is unknown, but it's no earlier than 1405. Like, okay. Even that, you're like, wow.
Like, quite a time.
Crazy. And then he was executed, spoiler, on the 26th of October, 1440. Like, we all knew he was dead now because, you know, of course. But yeah, so this guy, he was like this French kind of nobleman. Was he a nobleman? He was just really rich. But he was raised by his grandfather. And he actually, funny enough, his dad knew that he was dying or something, or just knew that obviously he would die at some stage. But he had put into his will that he wanted his children to go to his brother because he didn't want them to go to his father, he's not a good person at all. And then he did die. Will went out the door. They're like, ha ha ha, no one cares. And they did go to the grandfather. So he was a bit stern. He was mad about getting him married off straight away. So I was like, great, at least we know it's not just the women. So they had a couple of different engagements for him. He got like serious wealth from his father passing. So he got a lot of money. So there's conflicting kind of reports on his first engagement. I looked at a couple of different YouTube videos. So go on to YouTube, put his name in, and the first kind of 5 or 6 YouTube videos, definitely have a watch of them. And one of the women who was doing a video on him, this was the only one I heard it on, and she said herself that there's kind of conflicting stuff. It was very hard to find anything about it. But one of the people he was betrothed to was from a nice family, quite well off as well, but was 4 years old.
Nice.
So even in the 1400s, the French court was like, can't marry a four-year-old. Can't marry a four-year-old. You have to wait until she's of age. And he was like, hell to the no, it won't be fucking waiting. Get me another bride. So the grandfather went and was getting another bride. He then was betrothed to his second bride, and she died. So yeah. She died. And it doesn't, like, nothing kind of comes up saying that that was iffy or anything. I think she just died, sadly. And then going forward from there, he was betrothed to his third and very wealthy wife. So this was like two like massively wealthy people coming together. And they got married. They had an heir. It was great. He then, people might know him from being in the 100-year war with against England. So then,
fun fact, that was more than 100 years.
Yes, it was. Yeah. So his grandfather, like the two things he wanted his grandson to do was be married and to fight in the 100-year war. He basically was kind of training him for this from the moment he got him into his, I'm going to say, possession. So he trained up. He actually got quite high into it. And he was almost like a protector for Joan of Arc. So anyway, there was a war. It was more than 100 years long. And so he battled with Joan of Arc, and he got like this massive notoriety from it. There's a couple of different things that I saw as well, whether or not like he went into debt because of the king, or if he went into debt because he was like really fond of putting on parties and plays. So I'll give you both takes on it. So him and his wife, like mega rich, richer than the king, and were like, oh, I'll take a house here. Why don't we have a holiday home here, darling? They're like, yes, that sounds great. So they do that. And then the king is like, fuck no, nobody is allowed to be richer than me, and nobody is allowed to buy more properties than me. So he actually stopped them being able to buy properties. And then he stopped them being able to go into contracts with people. And then they ended up losing loads of money and like all their houses and shit. So they went broke. Or the other story is that he really liked throwing parties. It was a bit of a Gatsby, where he decided he wanted to throw these lavish parties. And one of them was like this play that like had like 400 people in the cast, right? He really liked the choir as well. So he'd like listen to it. So they would sing in the play, and there was like 400 people in the play. And so he had to clothe all these people. But they would like throw away the clothes after one show. God. So like it was this huge expense. And then everybody who came ate and drank for free, like completely free. So he was just like, I'm the party person. This is the best in the world. I'm going to just wine and dine everyone. So I was like, here, look. Chills to Ray. Same bloke. Loving him. Again, there's kind of conflicting stories on whether or not it was the death of Joan of Arc when she was killed by because they said that she was a fucking witch and she was burned at the stake, or it was the death of his grandfather that made him kind of spiral and do some pretty terrible stuff. There is a long-standing kind of question between true crimers and like everybody really, but specifically like within true crime, it's like, ooh, who was the first, this sounds so awful, it's like, ooh, who was the first serial killer? If you're a true crime fan like we are, you'll get that, and it won't be as offensive as it just sounded in my own head. But basically, kind of going back, this is one of the first people that in history that has been kind of recorded as the serial killer. One thing I would say is look up this guy. It's a very interesting story. But be warned, the things that he is accused of doing to children are horrific. I won't be going into what he did, just know, well, like, not, you know, I'll be going into that they were killed and a certain amount of it, but I'm not going to be going into what was done. And be warned that all the videos I watched did go into it, some with a lot more detail and some not as much. But he was a bad guy. So it all started, So it all started when he saw this young boy, and he was like, do you want to come up and I will train you in as being a knight? I'll train you in knighthood. And people were like, this guy like fought in the Hundred Year War. He was with Joan of Arc. Like he was the biz. Like,
he had good standing character. Like
if you were going to be trained by anyone, it was this guy. You know, I imagine he's like Lancelot, Knights of the Round Table shit. Do you know? So this boy went up. Parents were delirious that their kids were in with a chance of working with this guy and training under him. The only problem was their children weren't coming back. So they were going missing. Ooh. Now, out of the hundreds of children that allegedly went missing within his castle, the majority of these were boys. There were some girls, but the majority were young boys. So it was said that after he, you know, kind of lost the plot a little bit after either the death of Joan of Arc or his grandfather, that he got really into the occult and alchemy. And he wanted to try and get his riches back by doing like these satanic rituals. So he was doing all these satanic rituals. And funny enough, Emer, gold wasn't just magically appearing. So he wasn't that happy about it. And he was all like, what am I doing wrong? And somebody was like, silly DeRay, you're not killing children. And he was like, shut.
Obviously.
I'm not. So he said, look, I'm really going to put some time and effort into this. Really, like, New Year's resolution, I'm going to put some effort into this and manifest this shit and kidnap and kill a load of children. And funny enough, Emer still didn't get the gold.
Well, I mean, I'm shocked.
He's
putting in the work. Why is he not getting it back?
Jill DeRay was extremely shocked. Very upset by it all. But yeah, so basically, the story goes, he then kidnapped somebody from the church, a clergy member. And at this stage, the church stepped in and they were like, you may take our children, but you not, may not take our priests, which seems to be a common tale with the Catholic Church. So yeah, he's arrested. The first boy that he took, they kept, and he became like their page and like scholar. Or
so would it have been like Stockholm syndrome, or did they just not do anything bad with that kid?
They just kept him. And he was like their, is it a page boy or something? I don't know.
It's basically on your training up to be a knight. You start out as a page and a squire and all that.
So he was a page, and so he was actually getting the training, but he also was, you know, there for all the murder. And he basically said yes, that this did happen, and that Jill DeRay was doing this, and he was like getting boys to come to the house, and then he would kill them, and on occasion he would decapitate them as well. He'd take off their head and then he would burn them.
Ouch.
Yeah, so they would be completely burned, and that's how he'd get rid of the body. And for a while they said that he had all the beautiful heads on displays. After torture, quite similar to what you're going to talk about, after the torture, he went on to admit that he did this, that he did kill the boys, and he did all of the things he was accused of. So he was accused of paedophilia, which will explain the extra things that I'm not talking about, murder and heresy. And he was hanged.
Yeah.
He was either hanged or beheaded. I can't remember. But he was killed and he was sentenced to death. So he's kind of like noted as the very first serial killer. Like it's claimed that there were hundreds of young teenagers and young kids that he killed. Now, the one thing is that people started to look into it. And they were kind of like, wonder. And like people as early in the 1400s started to look into it. But more recently, I think it was 1999 or 1990, that the New York Times actually ran something saying that there was interest in retrying him, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Which I just think is like fascinating that somebody in the 1400s like would have committed this, like, I feel like I'm on SVU, this heinous crime.
Yeah, but like on such a wide scale that they're accusing of, like in the hundreds.
Oh, like crazy. And so they basically were like, I think actually, you know, we could have something here. Now, in that particular video, the guy goes on to say that like French scholars and historians were like, that's terrible. This guy is the worst man in the world, the worst person in French history. There's no way he's a serial killer. Now, kind of contrary to that, the other video I watched, she was like, and it was mainly French historians that were trying to clear his name. So I'm not 100% sure what side everybody lay on. But there was one person. Now, when your man said her name first, I was like, what? So her name is Margot K. Juby. But I heard him say Margot KBG. So I put that down because I thought you would find it funny.
You're right.
So then she went on to say that she feels she is DeRay's representative on Earth. And she has done like a load of research, like tons of research. And she actually did a mock trial. And she did it as if it was being presented today. And she kind of proved that it would never, ever go to trial today. There was they never found any remains of any children or any people at all. They said that there was no way that he could have effectively burned absolutely everything. There would have been bone fragments or bones left. Mm. But that there was no way that he would have definitely been able to burn them all and get rid of and discard like hundreds of bodies. They also said the fact that he, just because he had admitted to it, it was under like duress because it was after he was tortured. And they didn't really, like the stories by the people who were like, oh yeah, it was definitely done, I saw it all, they changed quite a lot and quite a bit.
Mm.
So it never kind of, basically, they kind of proved that no, it wouldn't have gone ahead. And there was also a trial in France, and he was fully cleared in France from this trial, like years and years later. So he was totally exonerated. So even though many believe that he is the first serial killer ever, more people believe that he wasn't, and that he was actually falsely accused and falsely put to death. Mm-hmm. There is also a fairy tale that goes along with him. So it's called Bluebeard. Now, I'll hold my opinion on this fairy tale to after. I imagine you're going to come to the same realization. So the fairy tale starts where there's this nobleman, French nobleman, and he was looking for a wife. Now, he has had many wives before, Emer.
Bit of a player,
yeah. So he had a long blue beard, and this made people think that he was like grotesque and like really ugly. And he lived beside this woman who had two eligible daughters. And he was like to the woman, I would like to marry one of your daughters. The daughters were like, no way, blase, not happening. And then one of the daughters actually went to the castle and she spent some time with Bluebeard. And she figured out that actually, even though he may look hideous and grotesque, he himself was a kind man. And he was a lovable man. And she came home and she said, I have no reservations marrying Bluebeard. I love him and I want to marry him. So the marriage happens. They had a really loving marriage. And he was mad about her. She was mad about him. And he had to go away on some sort of business. And he told his wife. And he was like, I'm really sorry, but I want you to bring all of your friends here, so that you're not alone, have a party. And I want you to like be treating them all weekend, like get them nice things. And he just was genuinely a nice guy. And she was like, nice. Okay, cool. So he hands her all of the keys to the castle, to all the rooms in the castle. But he says, look, there's one place you can't go. And she's like, say what? And he was like, there is this room and just don't go in there. You can go anywhere else, but just don't go in there. So the wife is there. He's gone. They're having a party. And she's kind of like, oh, I really want to go to the room. No more than anybody else. So she decides she's going to go in. She goes up to the room. She goes down the long corridor. She opens the door. And she can kind of feel this thing underneath her feet. She's like, oh, what's that? What's that? And it's actually congealed blood. And it turns out that this is where all the heads, decapitated heads, and all the bodies of his previous wives are. So she's obviously freaked out. She's very worried and very scared. And when he arrives home, he comes home much earlier than she expected. And he's like, oh, I was on the way and I heard word that I wasn't needed where I was on my way to. And she's like trying to kind of mask the fact that she's terrified of him. And she's like, oh, darling, I'm so happy. And he's like, can I have all the keys back? And she's like, yeah. And she hands over all the keys. She's shaking. And he's like, where's the key to the room I told you not to go into? And she's like, oh, it's just on the cabinet. I'll go get it. And she goes to get the key. And she gives it to him and he's like, why is there blood on this key? You were in the room. And she was like, I wasn't. And then he was like, you were. And now you're going to live there with them too. And she's all like, oh my God. So he's like, you're going to die and I'm going to put you in. And she's like, please let me just pray to God before I die. And he's like, I will give you half of a quarter of an hour. So he gives her like 6.5 minutes, which I just thought was hilarious. So he gives her 6.5 minutes to say her prayers, but she is cunning, Emer, she's cunning. And she actually calls to her sister and she says, Anne, sister, I might have the name wrong. But after that, in the story, it goes, for that was her name. Every time I heard it, I was like, oh. And she says, go to the window and check. My brothers are coming today. can you see my brothers? And I was like, if you've called your sister Anne, should that not be both your brothers? So the whole way through now, she's saying, can you see my brothers? And she's like, I can't. I can just see dust and dirt. And she's like, oh, no. And Bluebeard is like, yo, you're one. Where are you? Come down. I need to kill you. And she's like, no, I'm still praying. Leave me alone. And then the sister's all like, I see two horses coming. There's two men, but they're still a bit away. And she's like, oh, thank the Lord that they're here, but they're still a bit away. And then Bluebeard's all like, I'm getting impatient. If you don't come down here, I'll kill you even more than I'm going to kill you. And she's like, oh, no. And then her brothers arrive and she's like, brothers of me and not of my sister Anne. He's going to kill me because I found all of his other dead. And then they kill him and she faints as if dead, like her dead husband. But then she wakes up, and because they had no heir, she got all of the money and she got all of his properties, which I was kind of like, good on you, you know, great to inherit that. So she uses her money as a dowry, a part of her money as a dowry for her sister to marry somebody she had long loved, like, lol, cute. And then she gives, then I was kind of like, this is that, which I suppose essentially is a dowry. She gives the rest of the money to her, to this man, this very kind man who she marries, who is so nice to her that she forgets that Bluebeard ever happened and tried to kill her. So that was the end of the story.
Wow. I think I've heard that somewhere. It has like a thing, especially the room that she's not meant to go in. But yeah, I don't know if I ever heard that in full.
I've never heard it in full like that. But when I read it, I was kind of like, tale as old as
yes.
You know, and also nothing like the story of Gilda Ray.
Like, but however, obviously someone was influenced by it enough.
Like,
or a little bit even.
Yeah, the bodies, maybe. I don't know. I was kind of like, ah, oh, this is a way away from killing kids. But I was kind of thinking when I was researching him, like the movies that came to mind for me were like The New Black Christmas, where they have the occult and the, you know, there's this society and stuff like that. And then when they spoke about the beautiful heads that he kept, it reminded me of one of the most terrifying movies I've ever seen, Return to Oz, when the Wicked Witch has all of the beautiful dancers' heads ready to put them on. So there actually is a French film about this.
I'm so glad I never saw that film.
Oh my God, you have to watch it. It's cuckoo crazy, like mental. But there is a French film about this. It's called Monstrum. I actually thought it was on Shudder, but the one on Shudder is about an Asian, like a historic Asian battle, which I want to watch as well. But it wasn't that film. But you'll be able to find loads about them online. If you have Amazon Prime in the US, there actually is a full documentary about him. Unfortunately, I couldn't get access to that. But YouTube has loads about him. If it's true, he's the worst person in the world. Or
yeah, like big if true.
Yeah, so it's crazy. Like, it's crazy to think that he's been totally exonerated now after the fact. But you know, people fairly believed it then. The one thing that actually Margot K. Juby said was that people wouldn't go against him because of the heresy. That kind of accusation. So if you went at that time and tried to support somebody who was up for an accusation of heresy, you would then be seen as a heretic as well.
You'd be there beside them.
Yeah. So they were kind of like, they picked the most like debaucherous, awful things. Like if you were going to be done for anything, then if you were a man, like it would be like saying a woman was a witch and a heretic.
It's very satanic panic of like the 80s as well.
It's 100% that. So I'm not even going to say what one of them was, but it was the pedophilia, the murder of children, and heresy. So they were kind of like, what are the three things that are the worst of the worst that we can put on him? And they put all three.
Yeah. They were saying, and at the time, I'd imagine that would be hard to prove otherwise in a time when it's basically all you have is your name and your word and your honor.
Absolutely. And it was felt as well that people were using this kind of thing as an excuse to say, this is why my child has gone missing. He's just killed them. Now, also, there is kind of reports saying that no more children went missing in that town for that time than any other town. But
it could have been another serial killer going at the same time. And it was like, this was a great excuse. And then he was like, ah, great, my meal ticket's gone, and move off somewhere else.
Yeah. See, this is it. So that is the story of Christa Berg.
Our Lady in Red.
Lady in Red. Oh no, it's not Christa Berg. Who sang that? That's gonna annoy me.
For Lady in Red?
No.
Driving Home for Christmas.
Yeah. Let's see. Driving Home for Christmas.
Let's like answer, and we'll have our answers that we could never get during our research.
Chris Rea.
Ah, yes. So you're there with the Chris's.
Chris Rea. I do apologize, Chris Rea.
I know you're a big fan.
Savage song. That's a great song. So yeah, world's first serial killer, Giles DeRay, or Giles DeRay, but not Chris Rea.
No. So I'm going
to
see your most serial killery person of a man, and I'm going to meet you with the Guinness Book of World Records top body count serial female killer. Female serial killer, not serial female killer. Although that was what she was accused of. It is Elizabeth Báthory, or as we all know her, Elizabeth Báthory, still held to this day in the Guinness Book of World Records as having killed 650 people. Although she only got put to trial, like it wasn't even her at the trial, but she was only really accused, they could only prove 80 people. And even at that, yeah, it's another one of those when you're like, it was during the plague. So it was really hard to tell who, you know, but I am not saying that the woman was a saint, because she was a cruel bitch. Forget about me accusing myself of that. This woman was hideous. But I will go into all of this because I am not giving her an out, but being a nasty ass bitch to your servants and to the peasants around you was not against the law at the time. This was she was born in 1560 in Hungary. And like with Giles DeRay, or however you say his name, she was like the richest of the rich. Like that, her family, the Báthorys, had more money than the king of Hungary. And her uncle was the king of Poland. Her nephew was the king of Transylvania. It's also said somewhere, I once heard that she's distant relative to Vlad Tepes, also known as Dracula. Her family flag was of the dragon, which the term Báthory, or the name Báthory, means great warrior. And it's like some myth in her family that a great, great, great uncle basically killed a dragon who was fucking up a town. And so they're like, oh, you're our savior. So he got called Báthory, which was great warrior. And so that became their family name. So like they were like, I mean, richest of the rich. They owned some serious land. But Elizabeth had a mean streak in her as large as her land. Her parents died when she was young. Like with Giles DeRay's fiancés, she was promised off to marry someone when she was 11 to his 15, but they waited a few years and they didn't marry until she was 15 to his like 19 or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, but like back in the Middle Ages, it was totally normal for people to marry really young because, you know, life expectancy is not so long. So there was also so many things said about her, even from a young age. They say that, like, she, after she got engaged to his name was Ferenc Nezadi, sorry. But she had to go live in his house. In his palace or castle, to be basically morphed into the perfect daughter-in-law. Now, as I said, after her parents died, she got taken in by an aunt, and like she is said to have bet the crap out of the servants. She once had a good old laugh at the sight of a man he was being punished for a crime of stealing, and that punishment was, whilst he was alive, his body was sewn into the body of a dead horse.
Yeah,
but she loved that.
That's some midsummer shit.
Yep. And that's just, you know, 1560s, 1570s Hungary. Yay! I'm just gonna say trigger warning, because I can't even talk about a lot of this without talking about some of the things she did to people. So I will give a pre-warning when I do this during her trial, when there was the things that were being accused. Again, I will say she never got taken to trial. Her servants did, and the people who worked for her, because she was so rich and so noble, no one could put her to trial.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And so basically you did the people who were also accused of helping her kill these people. And that's how they did it. Like, she got, basically it's true with the myth, she was kept in her castle. Now, it's either she was, as most people believe, she was bricked up into a room, just a little slot for food and air. I do wonder about the bathroom situation there, but I mean, like, you're also in the Middle Ages. So I guess, you know, less said about that, the better. But there's also people saying that she may have had like a level of a castle, like a floor to stay in. But like, yeah, it was more believed that she got bricked up, because her downfall was being a rich woman in the Middle Ages. There was, she was an only child. There was no male heirs to inherit all of that land. She married, Ferenc was from a very rich and wealthy family. Like, his dad was, there was something in Hungary called the Palatine, which is basically like one rung under the king, that the king had to do so much that he couldn't like see to everything. So he had this Palatine who would look after like the day-to-day stuff in all the towns. So that's what her father-in-law was, and then her husband became that after the death of his dad. So like, you're talking untouchable people. So when Elizabeth was younger, she had severe health problems, and historians have kind of speculated that that's the fact that her parents were first cousins, and so that gave her a bit of a weak constitution. She was actually epileptic, and she was prone to violent seizures. And interestingly enough, there was an ancient, like, I mean, there was bloodletting, was basically your give all our, you know, medical treatment. But also there was an even older tradition of putting the blood of a healthy person on your body, like on your face, to try and cure your epilepsy.
Wow.
So there's a question as to whether, she's the one who everyone says she bathes in virgin's blood. This got made up by a guy 100 years after her death, I would like to point out. So that's, I'm going to look into how the legend of her kind of spun out of control into the absolute like horror spectacle we have today after her death, when, you know, you're not going to get in trouble for it. Yeah, so I will also go back. So that could have been a way why maybe some people said that she would put blood on her if she ever did.
Yeah.
But she was also so cruel in her beatings of her servants that blood just may have just gone everywhere. It's also like, she was extremely well educated. She came from a time where you also had a ruling queen in England and in Scotland. Then you also have like really strong-minded mothers of kings in Spain and in France. So this was a time when it wasn't a bad idea to educate the women. She could speak four languages. And when she moved in with Frank in his castle, like, she was also trained as to how to look after his estates as well as her own estates. So, like, he fought in many a war, because at the time Hungary was fighting the Ottoman Empire, it was also basically no one got on well with their neighbors on any side. So there was never not a war. So basically Ferenc would go off and fight in a battle, because that was also at the time when the nobility had to lead their own armies. It wasn't a, you know, I'm just going to take out this deck chair and watch the battle happen and yeah, you guys do the fighting for me. So he would also write to her from the battlefield, and she'd be, you know, I think she may have gotten some ideas as to how to beat and torture from that. And she'd encourage him on what to do. And she loved getting his letters. And when he'd come back, like, they used to apparently, so rumor has it, torture servants together, even before they got married, like when they were younger and then after they got married. But Ferenc always had a hard line of, you can beat them, you can torture them, but you cannot kill them. So it also,
it's mad, isn't it though?
Yes, it, but like I said, so just also a little bit of context, if anyone's interested, there had previously just been a peasants' revolt. It was a historic battle where basically it was kind of like, whilst you had in plague times with so many rich people being killed off and the land, you know, the peasants were like, oh, well, you know, if we're the only ones here who can work the land, then we want rights. And so it eventually ended up with the peasants' revolt, and the noble people had to viciously suppress it. So the nobility were encouraged to basically beat down and subjugate the serfs and the peasants so that they'd never try to have an uprising again, which is so shitty. Like, there is not one good character in this story.
Like, this is really pretty fucking tragic.
It is. It's dark. You know, it was the Middle Ages, but the Middle Ages just came out after the Dark Ages. So you're kind of still in the, not really an enlightened age. So this is still just at the arse end of the plague as well. So people are still dying from this. There's also cholera. There's, like, it's just uncleanliness and dirt everywhere. So a lot of people could just die. There was also another myth and a legend about her, that while she was in Ferenc's house or castle, that she fell in love with either a tutor or someone who was in that castle to, like, educate them. And he was like 20 to her 13 or whatever. And they had an affair. Also, because you were married so young, this all sounds so gross to us now, but it wasn't like
that unusual.
Yeah, 13, 14 was kind of like almost, bitch, you better start having babies. So yeah, she had an affair with this man and she got pregnant, but they, after she gave birth, the baby was just handed off to someone else. But when Ferenc found out about this, he apparently flew into a rage and bet the man to death and castrated. No, he castrated him and then fed him to dogs. But yes, but yeah, everyone's crossing their legs. This just goes back to the time when you're like, there was no proof that she had a baby. There was no proof that this man even existed, the man who she had the affair with and who was killed. Even if she was sexually active at a young age, after she and Frank got married, they didn't have any children for the first 10 years of their marriage. And that led to a bit of mockery on Ferenc's side. But also, he was at a lot of fucking wars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he bought her when they got married. Castle, oh, I am going to butcher this because it's now in Slovakia, but it's a Hungarian name. Chakist? Okay, C-A-C-H-T-I-C-E, but I've heard it's like a hard start. I'd like want to call it Katish, but I think I'm really wrong.
You can't be as bad as me mixing up Charles Duray with Chris Rea. So look, you're grand.
Fair enough. I'll take that. So anyway, he bought her this castle, which if anyone was to Google it, as I said, it's C-A-C-H-T-I-C-E. It's such a bleak looking castle. It's still standing in Slovakia. But basically, this is where she got down to her most horrific crimes. Like, she lived there with Ferenc when he'd come back. So even though they didn't have children for the first 10 years, they ended up having 5 children. 2 died young, so they had 3, 2 girls and a boy. So this is what I feel like is interesting, is that there's not much mention of her children, because even though she died, there would have been a son carrying the name. So, like, I do wonder if there are still any Bathories living in either Hungary or Slovakia or anywhere in Eastern Europe. It would be very interesting to know. Yeah. Like, I'd like to see someone do a "Who do you think you are" kind of special on your lineage.
You mean, like, reach out.
Yeah.
Are you a Bathory? And maybe you just were so disgraced that it was named. It was changed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My name is like Bartholomew is my surname. Bath, Bed, and Bed, Bath and Beyond instead of Bathory.
Like, could you imagine if that was actually, they were just related?
Yeah. And then if you had a temper on you at all, they'd be like, look at that. It's the blood countess again. Now, remember your wedding, Grace, and my wedding. Decent amount of people at both.
Yes.
When they got married in 1574, there was 4,500 people at their wedding. And the party was
an intimate wedding for 2.
It was. They didn't want to fuss. They just wanted a nice, quiet wedding. Like, they had a rager of a party for like 3 days. But anyway, yeah. So they had their kids, and he would come. Like I said, he'd go. Like, they had a good relationship, but like, in all honesty, like, they were both well educated, mm-hmm. and they both kind of got educated together while she was living with him when they were younger. But they also united weirdly over their love of brutality. Like, he had a nickname, the Black Knight of Hungary, after the ways he used to fight against the Ottomans and use like hand-to-hand combat, torture. Basically, just like, they were a match made in their own little heaven. But anyway, so she was actually really good in some ways as well, because whilst he was off fighting a war, the Turks were invading the castle that she was living in.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth actually like let the peasants stay in the castle grounds to be defended. She fed them, she kept them there, and she also wrote out letters to people, like letting people know that they're okay. Like, she did a lot. So this is why there's like, if she was so good to them during this wartime, why was she then like killing 650 people?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to deny that she had anger issues, and she had like a and that she had a cruel streak. Yeah, that's what I mean. Nope. Poe buddies nerfed people. But there's this time when I don't know whether or not this was her taking the role of looking after the estates in this time, that during wartime she was like, I'm going to be the best person to you, but when this war is over, I'm going to go back to being a super dick to you. Like, I just feel like as if. And also, when people were like coming into the house and they thought, oh, there's this woman, I'm going to be able to get what I want off her. She's like, no, treat me like as if I'm the man of the house, because that's what I am when he's not here. But anyway,
fair play.
Yeah. Now, she also had, there's one of the more famous women in this story is Anna Darvolia. And she was a woman who was taken. She was the woman who would hire all the female servants, and she was also like the nanny to her 3 children. But she was basically like her right hand woman. It was rumored that she was a witch. But basically, when Ferenc was away and Anna came in, there was a change in Elizabeth's demeanor. Like, when Ferenc was away, she didn't stop beating on the servants, and she didn't stop torturing them. Like, it's rumored to say that when Ferenc gave her the castle, that there was like a special torture chamber at the bottom of it, because he knew what she wanted. There used to be this thing where if he felt like as if they went too far with a servant, he would put rolls of paper in between their toes, set it on fire, so it would make them like, if they were alive, they'd be like, so you couldn't even pretend to be dead around these people. Trigger warning, just one of the many. One of the things they used to do was cover your body in honey and leave you outside for bees and insects to have their go at you.
No, Emer, no.
Yeah, like, I mean, their saw level of imagination for their torture, what they did to people. So after a 40-year marriage, was a 40-year marriage, maybe something like that, 30 or 40, Ferenc dies. He took on this illness where he lost like the use of his legs and then he died, but he knew he was dying. So he wrote out letters to people where he was basically saying, I want my wife to be protected. I want the land to stay with her. So because it came from him and he was the Palatine at the time, so his, like, basically she was running it for her son for when he became of age.
Okay, yeah.
So it was basically like they had to, so she became, you know, like the most sole female, like most powerful woman in Eastern Europe at the time. So I will also say just before he died that even though they were really rich and untouchable and powerful, there were rumors as to what was going on in their castle. And there were actually some local pastors, because they're Lutheran Protestant, and they became suspicious of what was happening in the castle. And the fact that they had to perform so many funeral rites for the servant girls, she kept saying that they died of cholera, so that they needed to be buried straight away. It was either she'd be like, it's plague, it's cholera, they need to be buried straight away, or I need to burn the body. Like, and this was happening so often that a priest had called her aside after having attended one too many funerals. And he had said to her, your grace should not have acted so because it offends the Lord, and we will be punished if we do not complain to you and criticize your grace. And in order to confirm that my words are true, we need only exhume the body and you will find that the marks identified the way in which death occurred. So that was like a Billy Big Balls of the priest to come up to her and be like, I know what you're doing. And it's because the fact that these were all peasants and it wasn't illegal to even kill them. And to treat them so bad to kill them, because they were of a different like level of human being at the time to the nobility. But the fact that he was like, I know that this isn't illegal, but I have to point out that this is just wrong.
I see you, Bathory.
Yeah.
I can see you.
I am writing a list and I am going to bring this to someone.
When I get to heaven, I'm telling God.
Yeah, but like this pissed Elizabeth off so much, she threatened the priest and she was like, you know, you can't mess with me. She stormed out of the church after the funeral and kind of left it with her husband at the time just to kind of smooth things over. But that's what I mean. Oh, sorry. Yeah, they had a 30-year marriage. After the time he died, she was 44 years old and she was alone. She had no one to help her out. Also, no one to check her in the sense of
check yourself before you wreck yourself,
before you wreck a girl, maybe. Yeah, but yeah, so this caused another change in Elizabeth. So you had Anna coming in a while before that, and then yeah, she became a bit more crueler, but the husband was like at least keeping that at bay. And then it was like so many more people died after the husband died. So she also became, the servants had noticed she became more sadistic, and you could say it was like the stress of having to take the reins of the entire empire that both of their, that their wedding had like combined in their land. And so what was maybe a hobby, or like she had this way where she wanted everything to be run a specific way, like the stitching had to be done just so, or had to be tidied like this, and if you fucked up you could lose your fingers. So there was like almost 400 servant girls were like over the, were employed at a time because there was so much land. And so she had just, she had people. And also, even though the villagers around, like she had like this young boy who worked for her. I can't remember his name, but he was a disfigured young boy. And his nickname was Fizko, which I think is like Eastern European or Hungarian for like little boy. But so he'd come into town with Anna, they'd get girls. And like some people are like, get the fuck away from my family. You're not taking my child. Some other people were so poor and they also had like a family of like 12 or whatever. So you'd be like, yeah, take my daughter. I have one less mouth to feed and I get paid. Like they kind of knew that it was 50-50 yeah. chance of what was going to happen to their daughters. But they were like, we just, you know, it was a hard time to be a peasant.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, so this was like one of the myths about her, that she'd go, you know, you'd see her carriage going through the town where she was picking off girls. Of course, because they were also like, she'd get girls from the ages of 10 to 14, that this is where the rumor kind of came about that she was looking for virgins. It just so happened to be that they would have been virgins, most of them. Again, because of their age.
Yeah.
So apparently some of Elizabeth's closer people who she kept along with, there was about three or four people like washerwomen and people who looked after the house and cooks and stuff, kind of joined in with her sadistic streak and thought, you know, it's kind of like if you can't beat them,
yeah,
beat the other people.
if so, you don't want to be bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, and what was weird was apparently some of the women would try and outdo the other woman to impress Elizabeth with how sadistic they could be with some of the other servant girls. So like she'd like backhand, like Elizabeth would be like that. I said if something was done wrong, she would just fly into rage and just start beating them and backhanding and whatever. And this is where obviously the legend came up where she struck someone and blood hit her face and she was like, oh, I look so young, I'm going to just get I'm going to get blood from everybody. But in all honesty, if you're torturing and like whipping people so much that their skin's going to be tearing, yes, there's going to be blood. Like they said that the house was dripping in blood, but that's just because it was a messy thing that they were doing.
Yeah.
Like there was ones where you could be stripped naked, sent outside in the cold, like the freezing cold, and constantly have buckets of water thrown on you. So you would eventually, like ice would form on your skin because it's just so cold and you'd freeze to death. That was a tame one.
Like that was one of the ones you kind of hoped for.
Yeah. Another little trigger warning was she also used to love inflicting psychological torture on her victims. So like after sticking needles into the fingers of one girl, she would comment, if it hurts the whore, she can pull it out. So the girl would naturally then take this as permission to pull the needle out. But when she did, Elizabeth would pull out a knife and cut the finger off. And, you know, she'd also liked to bite people, which again, not helping with the legend of her being a vampire and biting people. You were lucky if basically all you lost was a finger or two, because they were all competing with each other to, and I'd say your nerves would be shot.
Yeah.
And so you're only going to create a mistake by like you're shaking hands, and if you've got like, I don't know, only one working hand. And again, one of her worst crimes that she was accused of, and there's no proof to this, was that when she was torturing one of the girls, she made her cut off her own flesh, cook it and eat it herself.
Oh.
Yeah. Again, I just feel like as if this is people spitballing, what's the worst thing someone could do?
You know me now, like two people into this, I'd be like, Bathory, I'm just hopping outside for a second there. And she'd be like, oh, it's very cold outside. And I'd be like, no, it's gone. Just give me a second. I'll be back in a moment. And I'd freeze myself to death.
Yeah, it'd be better. I'd rather have control over how that went.
Hit my head off something enough.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't like this. I don't want to play anymore.
I know. So basically, as the years go on and...
legit sounded like The Exorcist there. I was like, do I say it? But I was like, yes, it needs to be commented on.
Sorry.
No, it was delightful.
There we go. So like kind of around about 1609 is when basically the rumors had hit a peak. And like the bodies were piling up, that it was said that she was just burying them in shallow graves and hungry animals would come and take them out. But there was also like a rumor, I will say, in a slight, just to give and play devil's advocate, she was thought to be like a healing woman who had used her castle for women to come in. And she was also saying that she used to give abortions to people if they wanted it, because again, religious time, so people would inevitably die from it. She was also trying to treat illnesses, and as I said, bloodletting was like a number one cure for everything, so blood was going to be everywhere. And so she couldn't go to the authorities if these people died, because what she was doing was against the law, like she was trying to practice medicine. Like I said, she was very well educated, so maybe she thought she could help. So like that, with letting people in with the castle when the Turks were invaded, was it, I mean, again, I'm not saying that she wasn't cruel to people, but was there also a thing where she was trying to help, or she was like experimenting on them to educate herself, but if they died, they died? Because again, these people were of a lower class, and they didn't matter if they died. So it came up to the stage where she, like with Giles de Ray and the guy, the boys would come in to learn to be knights and be pages and squires. Noble women would, and this would happen, where you'd go to another noble woman's house of a higher stature to learn from them and to learn how to be a noble woman. And what happened with Elizabeth that really fucked her up was she went from killing peasants or like torturing to a few noble women went missing and never came back. And basically their parents, so their parents went to the King of Hungary, King Matthias II, and was like, even though like they're kind of, I don't think they're related, but anyway, they were like saying, you need to investigate. Now it means something. So he sent out an investigator called Gheorghe Thurzo, and this man is a dick, because he wanted her land, and I think he was like a cousin of, like, everyone here is kind of related in some way or another with the nobility. Ferenc actually had written out to Thurzo as well when he was writing as many letters to people to look out for Elizabeth. He sent a letter out to this Thurzo guy to look out for his wife, but he claimed that his loyalty to the king was stronger than that of his old friend. Like, they actually fought in battles together. But apparently, he says, he treated Elizabeth with a level of respect that she would not have otherwise received. And I think what he meant in that was the fact that he didn't put her on trial. He put the close people who was working with Elizabeth. So he went down hard on her. That's what she said. He wanted her land. He wanted her money. So there was a kind of a thought now, looking back on this, that basically, like, her children had grown up relatively well-ish. Her daughters were married off, and her son had a lifelong kind of tutor. I think he might have only been a teenager at this stage. And it's kind of callous, but basically they'd all conspired with Thurzo and was like, we'll let you investigate our mom if we can all get a bit of the land too. So they didn't object to anything. No one went spoke on her behalf. And it's just, she had so much money. Like I said, she was richer than the king. She had so much money and she had so much land. And basically Thurzo had become the new Palatine after Ferenc died. So he was like, yo, I want in on this. And basically his wife was like pushing him as well, going, I want her clothes, I want her jewelry, I want her house. So with that, he started an investigation into her. But also, like, the fact that nobody seemed to like cop, this was Thurzo's MO, where he basically accused someone of doing something horrific, or he said he was going to investigate it, and sully their name so much that they lose their rank. He had done this to, I have this here, her nephew, who was he wasn't the king of Transylvania, he was the prince of Transylvania. Thurzo wanted to take over the region and make it a part of the kingdom of Hungary, so he did the same thing. He basically just overthrew him through like tearing his name down. Mm-hmm. So he had done this just so that he could gain power and land, so that like the next thing was happening to Elizabeth. So she actually kind of knew this. So she had one of the servants who had died. Elizabeth went into the village, got that woman's mother, and basically was trying to get her to testify that she died of like cholera. It's like she, like Elizabeth wasn't stupid. She knew that eventually some man was going to try and take her down. And she was like, I need to get some people on my side. And there were a lot of servants who had testified to say that she wasn't, like, she didn't kill them, because there were survivors, and that she wasn't that bad. But yeah, she had a really bad temper on her.
Yeah.
So basically, Thurza was like, all right, I can't put her to trial, but I want all her land. So he found a loophole in a law which said that if a rich noble person is caught red-handed committing a crime, that they could be punished without having ever be put on trial. So he began like hatching a plot of basically how to ruin her reputation and steal all of her land. So what he did was, she was like having dinner. He kicked the door and was like, aha, I accuse you of killing a girl. And she was like, bitch, I'm having my dinner. What are you talking about? And he's like, dad, give me 24 hours. And came back with the body of a dead person. And like he had dug up someone, because it's so cold there, like a body had preserved, someone who had just died of an illness. But again, with a bit of decomposition, it might have looked like as if she had died from being bed up. And also a quote unquote, but also possible, ex-victim of Elizabeth who testified that she had savagely tortured her and bet her. So he was like, he fabricated in a way where he was like, I saw you kill this girl, and this other girl's going to attest to seeing that too, and that you bet her up. But again, this is what I'm trying to say, is that even though, yes, some of the servant girls there were treated horrifically, servants in every household in Renaissance Hungary were being treated like shit.
Yeah.
They had to be extra firm with the servants to prevent them from rebelling. It was how everyone had operated. I'm not saying that that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But it's
like, you're not being like, look, you gotta do what you gotta do. You're like, it's awful. It was just the norm.
Yeah. And it's not like what happened in her house might not have been like wildly different from how they were treated elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But then again, how many people were also having a priest write a letter about how cruel she was being? So maybe it was worse. He had his evidence. So then the trial started. And like I said, Elizabeth wasn't put on trial, but there was four people, Anna Darvelia, two other female servants, and Fisco. And they tortured the shit out of those people to get a confession. They also, people who had like gave stuff in benefit for Elizabeth, they tortured them to recant it. They tortured people just to get statements claiming that she had, that they had witnessed her like killing people in her torture lair. But of course, when Thurza was sending this off to the king, he was like, no, I didn't torture anybody. He just like X'd that part out and said, here are the statements from people and here are the confessions. So it basically, what he had come up with from torturing the four servants was he had accused her of the deaths of 36 to 50 young women in the 10 years that they were working for her. And when people were asked about the cruelty towards the young women, the servants mostly seemed to have blamed two of the women called Helena, Jo, and Dorco, along with the mysterious Anna Darvelia. And so they're trying to say is, yes, like they did this for Elizabeth, like that she'd sit there and watch them be tortured. So in January 1611, the four servants were put on trial. Their transcripts were, from their interviews, were taken as a confession of guilt. But they had all stated that the crime that they'd been committed was at the request of Elizabeth. So like more than 300 witnesses were testified. And if you weren't one of the people who was tortured for your statement, you were a relation by blood or marriage to Thurzo. So fucking dodgy. Well, as I said, many of the servants also offered contradictory evidence that they'd been to say that they'd been tortured before they gave their statements. So like I'm saying, it was just like, what really happened? How can you trust anything when the regular statements are coming from people who are being tortured? The confessions are being made from people who are being tortured.
Yeah.
So the thing where I said about the Guinness Book of World Records record for her killing 650 people, this is where I think Guinness need to do a little bit of extra research when they're coming up with their titles, because the way that we have this was some random woman named Susanna. There is no surname on the record. She stated that her friend had seen a list that Elizabeth kept listing the names of 650 people who she'd murdered. And that alone is all that we have to state that she'd killed 650 people. Some girl called Susanna's like, yeah, well, a friend of mine, she saw like her list and there was like 650 people on it. And that's the truth. And Guinness are like, yeah, that sounds right to me. Crack yeah. open a can. We got us another one.
That's fairly legit.
Yeah. So from like 1611 to 2022, that's still fact.
Look, very different lists, but in all areas of our lives, at some stage, we have lied about our own lists. So I don't think anyone should take any credence on lists.
Basically, at the conclusion of the trial, all four servants were found guilty. The three women were tortured, fingers taken off with hot pincers. And then either killed and then thrown on a funeral pyre or just thrown on a bonfire. Now,
like, the thing is, God love them. Like, they were damned if they did and damned if they didn't. It's no kind of worse than what she was doing to them in the house.
It was two of the women were killed that way. And Fisco was actually, I think he was decapitated instead of tortured and killed. And I think they did that because he was so young and he was disfigured. So I think they were just trying to claim that this was just his job, was to get the women, not that he was doing anything. But there was a woman also called Catalin Benica. So she was on trial as well. And it's not known what happened to her, what her fate was. Like, she was found guilty, but she was of a slightly higher class than the other people convicted. So she was either killed quietly or returned to her family with no harm done. Because again, once you're rich, you can get away with stuff.
Yeah.
So what happened to Elizabeth is like that. No trial, but she was stripped of her titles and she was kept in the castle that she committed all these crimes. She was, her land and her money and estates were split up between the people who were like allowing this to happen. And Thurzo and his wife moved into her castle.
Gorge.
Yeah. So she died on August 21st, 1614, at the age of 54, having spent the last 4 years of her life bricked into a room, while her land and wealth was divided between her family members and her enemies. She was never convicted because she was never put up on trial. And also a year before her death, her nephew, who was the Prince of Transylvania, who Thurzo was after, had been murdered. And so that was
murder.
So basically, this was the end of a Bathory ruling a country. And so they would have just maybe remained a part of the nobility. And like I said, curious as to what happened between the lineage of her three kids.
Yeah.
Now, this is where it was salacious enough in the trial of what was coming up in the transcripts as to what she was doing and what she was witnessing and allowing and requesting people to do for her. But about 100 years after her death, a man named Laszlo Turowski, he recounted the story of the trial. And this is where he used a bit of artistic license. And it was the first time that it was ever stated that she had bathed in the blood of her murdered victims. Now, this guy was also a Jesuit, a Catholic. So it could be like he was making it even worse because they were trying to besmirch the Protestants and all the murders that they get up to. But like there was no, like people have looked into all the transcripts from the trial. There is no mention of her bathing in it. And again, there's no mention of her specifically wanting virgins. This kind of was like a a cult of personality.
Sensationalized.
Yeah. She becomes like even bigger and nastier than
she's like a caricature of herself.
Yeah. So then we just have like kind of, obviously that was the start of in media and in books and all this, how she became, as you say, like a caricature of her former self. And then as well, like Bram Stoker used her as an influence for Dracula between yeah. herself and Vlad Tepes. Also in like Victorian England, they were like, that would have been what, 300 years later, stories of her were popping up in penny dreadfuls, all this sort of stuff. And then you have in modern ages, films made about her. And I'm just going to say one I came across when I was looking for, I wanted to pick a film. There are so many and so many bad ones, but this one just seems so stupid. It's called Chastity Bites and okay. it has Kate Beckinsale in it. I'm just going to read a little snippet on it. In modern day California, Liz Batho, is running an abstinence program in her local high school. Her virginity action group is keeping her well supplied with virgin blood she needs until a high school blogger begins to smell something funny about the whole situation. That's not the film.
Watch this movie.
Yeah, Chastity Bites, if anyone else is interested. That was not the film I had watched. What I watched turned out to be a really weird film called Daughters of Darkness. And it's one of those European films from the 1970s where everybody's from a different part of Europe, but they all spoke English. They actually weren't dubbed over. Okay. And it starred Delphine Seyrig as playing Countess Elizabeth Bathory. And then you had another couple in it called Stefan and Valerie, who like just met. It seemed like as if they just met and then they just got married. And they got delayed upon going back to England to go back to Stefan's mother. And they end up staying in a hotel. Elizabeth comes into the hotel with another female vampire. And it's a lot of, it was during the time where you had like lesbian vampire films. So they were really leaning into it. It's a very...
Vampire films have always kind of like...
Oh yeah, but like it was from the 60s where they started doing it, so they're still like, because this is 1971 where it started, this was really like leaning into it. And we find out that like it's so weird, like Stefan is a sadomasochist, and he like Elizabeth would, the only part in it that was good was she was recounting her ancestors, as she was calling it, Elizabeth Bathory. And Stefan had learned about it in school. So they were talking about it. They were scaring the shit out of Valerie. She's like, stop it. Stop talking about that. And that's the only bit where they were talking about the way she had tortured people. Like, obviously, he was getting turned on by it. And she was just having the lols at remembering what she'd done before. And basically, Elizabeth wants to have Valerie as her next, like, lesbian vampire partner. And so she tries to separate herself and Stefan. It's weird. There's a lot of talking in it, but it could be seen as like a modern vampire film in the sense that it's not just all bite, 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 and then, you know, a climactic death or whatever. And there was a lot of like, hey, you can see how she's trying to turn Valerie against Stefan. Stefan just decides on a whim to beat the shit out of her like 2 days into their wedding. And also how Stefan's mother, who he seems to be terrified of, is just an effeminate man. And you're like, what's that family story about?
Okay.
Yeah, it is bonkers of a film. And okay. I did kind of dip in and out of interest. I was like researching. I was looking through my notes at the time that this was on. And you'd look up every once in a while and go, that's weird.
that's strange.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was, it was just what I'm saying. Like, it was rumored that Elizabeth Bathory, when she was a young girl, after her parents died, when she was living with her aunt, that they had had a lesbian relationship and that the aunt had also taught her the ways of sadomasochism and witchcraft. Again, none of this is backed up by truth.
Yeah.
So like that, between that, having a child out of wedlock, all these things were just like, I don't know whether it was like backdated besmirching or just people envious of how rich and wealthy she was from.
Yeah.
Year zero for her. Like, if anyone is interested in reading up about this as much as I was, because I'm very aware of how long I prattled on about this, but it's just so intense there's so much to it.
Yeah.
So there's a few books that I looked into. So you have Elizabeth Bathory, Evil Beauty by Brian Montgomery, The Blood Countess by Valentine Penrose, Elizabeth Bathory by Edward Eaton, and Countess Dracula, The Life and Times of Elizabeth Bathory, The Blood Countess by Tony Thorne. And there's also a really good article by Anne Foster, who also does a podcast called Vulgar History, I think it is. And she's kind of like had a really good detailed article on that, and you can find that, I think, on Anne Foster Writer or something like that online. You could Google it and find it, but it's just like, I mean, it's I don't think it was as bad as they said it was, but I don't think she didn't do anything. Like, she definitely did stuff to people.
Yeah.
And I'd say what happened a few times, and possibly what happened, there could have just been deaths from cholera and the plague. And I'd say what happened is when Ferenc died, she may have gone overboard and bet people to death accidentally.
Yeah, I think the whole beating somebody is pretty bad anyway.
Yeah, and I'd say what happened is without Ferenc stopping her, she was going to the full force of the depravity she wanted to inflict upon people. And then, well, like that, but with
also kind of like beat someone to death accidentally once, shame on accidents, yeah. Beat somebody to death accidentally hundreds of times, shame on Bathory.
Yeah, at least 36 to 50 people that they could pin down to say had for sure died and in her, like, under her care.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, that's it. If anyone is, I was just going to say, so if anyone found that interesting and not completely boring, let us know, because we're thinking about doing this again at another stage.
Yes, there's a few more people that we both want to have a look at. A
lot more bastards to talk about.
There is a lot. Yeah. So from one... well, two bastards to another more fictional folklore and one. Our 100 movie this week is Sleepy Hollow, which was actually voted for by our followers on Instagram. Thank you so much for voting on that. Sleepy Hollow is 1999, a Tim Burton movie starring Christina Ricci and...
Jonathan Depperadius.
So Ichabod Crane is sent to Sleepy Hollow to investigate the decapitations of three people, with the culprit being the legendary apparition, the Headless Horseman.
Do you know what's so funny in that film? He's called a Hessian. And it always makes me think of the material Hessian, but yeah. I didn't realize a German soldier for hire, or at least there's a group of soldiers in German, were called Hessian. And I was like, it wasn't until I was listening to another podcast or some other one, and it was like, Hessian warriors. I'm like, was that just the clothes they were wearing? Or no.
That just gives me shivers. We were at a florist before for, God, I can't remember, was it Grace's or Amy's wedding? And... the florist kept misprinting.
I think it was Amy's, because I remember you guys were telling us this when you're in A Good Time Together.
Yes. And it just every time she said it, and I think the girls tried to get her to say it more, because I just like shudder. I was like, this is not the way you say it. I was being a bit of a dick.
I didn't
say it to her, but I was like, stop saying that word.
Stop it.
Stop it. It was very funny. But yeah. So this movie, typical Tim Burton-esque movie.
I think it's like one of his best of the modern films he's done, like of the late 90s.
Yeah.
Because then the 2000s get a little bit,
I did love his remakes of Alice in Wonderland, Willy Wonka, No Thank You Sir.
No, but like this film, like you've got Danny Elfman doing the score, who also did Nightmare Before Christmas. The costumes, and just the setting, it was so gothic. It was just pure.
It was very gothic.
And instead of it being gothic for the sake of being gothic, this had to be gothic because of the time that it was set in.
Yeah. And Christina Ricci's dress when they arrive in the city, I'm like,
Oh, the black stripes on it. Oh,
flawless. It's essentially your wedding dress, just with black and white.
Shit, man, I should have gotten some black stripes. Where it was striped down, I should have just had that as black. That'd have been black velvet. That'd have been lovely.
Gorge.
Getting married again.
Oh my God. You should totally do your wedding dress like that for the For Love Horror convention.
Yeah, I'm just going to like walk through and be like, what's up?
What's up?
Yeah.
And then I can dress as like him or the Headless Horseman.
We got this sorted.
Hilarious. Gas. I love it. And you'll be so pretty and bridal, and I'll be like, I've no head.
We don't have to worry about any pandemic. Like, if we have to worry about it, then we're fucked anyway. But in October, no head, no coronavirus. No head.
I'm Owen McNove. I have no willy. It'd be great. It'd be perfect. Oh, yeah. Big thumbs up from me. I think it's a brilliant movie. I don't think it's a rewatch movie.
No, like, I think
it was... You've seen it once or twice, you've seen it enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like you could listen to the soundtrack, I'd say, maybe, if you were interested in it.
Definitely. That's,
yeah, yeah. But yeah, it's camp. It's also like very camp at the same time. Like Johnny Depp is like his Ichabod Crane is so like,
yeah.
It was one of his first characters where instead of playing like a cool character. Oh, I know he was obviously like Edward Scissorhands. He played oddball characters, but this one was like spooked at everything.
Yeah, yeah. He's always kind of oddball.
It was the first time that I ever finally understood what an Iron Maiden was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not just a British band.
I also felt the weird sexualization of the mother was just a bit much for me.
Really. Oedipus much.
Mm. I was just like, no.
Yeah.
Let's just, I'm all for like wearing what you want and stuff, but that was purely for the audience.
Yeah. The tits on her.
Purely.
Yeah.
I'm also wildly jealous that I couldn't pull it off. So join us next week. We're going into February. So this year we are on the ball. Whereas last year we were very much behind the month, but we are going to be doing a month on women in horror. And we're also going to have some fabulous women from horror join us. We have some podcasters, we have business owners, we have some really like amazing social media stars as well. So we're really excited, and we can't wait to look at all the kind of stereotypical tropes of women in horror and just have a bit of fun.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to this. Like I said, we were kind of like, holy shit, it was halfway through February. You're like, it's women in horror month. We're like, we missed an opportunity.
Derp. And it's a funny one as well, because I often kind of go like, I think sometimes you're kind of like, it's annoying that we have to be like women in horror as opposed to just people in horror. Mm-hmm. But then as well, you know, it's no lie that like women are like underrepresented in a lot of lines, but as well, it's a weird one because women within horror and horror movies and the horror genre are like often brutalized, and they're often like really, really horrifically maimed and murdered, but they're often like the like loves of the story. Like you have the final girl, like that's the thing in the genre. Like they're like these icons, women who are like these final badass girls.
You remember them so much more, like Nightmare on Elm Street, Alien, Scream. Like they're final girls, and you're like, well, who's the final guy in certain horror films? I'm like, I'm actually struggling right now. I'm just trying to think of like some guys who are like the last survivor of horror movies.
But like they kind of do that in some horror movies where they're like, oh, the final boy, you never see it, because like women are,
do you know, nine times out of 10 the killer is a man.
Yeah, well, that's it as well. So it's a weird one. You're kind of like, But it's just, I love the fact that like so many icons in horror are actually female.
Yeah.
And celebrated female.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Not just that we are
just picking them out because we want to and we're trying to struggle to find someone. Like they
exactly.
They are in our face.
Yeah. This is actually a celebration of
Yeah, it's that old cliche of horror movies as well, that it's like made by a man for a male audience. And there's so much women in horror that we're like, fuck you, man. We are like well represented. We definitely more so now. But like you had women making horror movies in the 70s and 80s. So go check yourself.
Yeah, yeah. So we're excited for that. It's just going to be really nice. Yeah. So make sure to follow us on Instagram on Because You Are Home with an underscore in between each word.
And you can listen to us on most podcast platforms. If you listen to us on Apple, we'd really appreciate a rate and review. And if you listen to us on Spotify, you can also rate us there too. And if you listen to us anywhere else, just tell a friend. Word of mouth, baby.
Word of mouth.
Awesome.
Bye.
Bye.